Peace. Good afternoon. Happy holidays to you. It is a pleasure to be with you once again. I welcome you with all my heart. I love every one of you, no matter what you are, what you've been, what you're going to be. My love is unconditional. It makes no difference what you do, what you say. Love can never be removed. For love is a cosmic reality. Love is the essence of spiritual life. Love is beauty and joy and the absolute reality. I want to thank those people who participated in the Children's Fund and brought toys for the orphan children. They really enjoy the toys. You are blessed for that. And I thank you for the gifts that you shared with me. It's really interesting. For 40 years I roamed this world prior to coming to LA. When people gave me gifts, I usually blessed them and gave them back to them or gave them to some poor person. But now I'm stuck in LA. I've become a householder, so to speak. People dress me up like a peacock. And here I am. The result of the gifts you give me. The Bandara today is in celebration of three different occasions: Christmas, Hanukkah, and the birthday of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi, which is on the 30th. Of the former two, we know very little. We know very little about Christ, very little about Hanukkah, the burning of the candles, just stories that have been handed down to us. We know whether they're true or not, but it makes no difference. What we do know is the extraordinary life of Ramana Maharshi. This we know very well. When Ramana was 16 years old, he was living with his uncle. All of a sudden he felt sort of lightheaded. He went into his uncle's room and he felt he was going to die. But he wasn't afraid. He welcomed death, so to speak. He lay down on the floor and crossed his arms on his chest. His blood pressure went down and he felt like he was dying. He was leaving his body. He said to himself, "So this is how this is dying. It's not bad." But instead of dying, he became absorbed in absolute reality and consciousness. He didn't have an out-of-body experience, on the contrary. He wasn't sailing through the universe, seeing things and enjoying things. He was not in the universe was in him. He was the universe. He was the source of all phenomena. He had this realization. His essence was in the trees, the mountains, people, animals, everything. You became pure awareness. You were suddenly aware of everything at the same time. Omniscience. Then for some reason it came back to the body, became body conscious again. Yet his entire personality changed extraordinarily. He was a completely different person. He was born again as a sage. He no longer had any interest in schoolwork or his friends. He used to sit for long hours in his uncle's house and do nothing. He wouldn't do his homework. One day his older brother saw him like this and he told him, if you want to be a sadhu, why don't you go out into the jungle and stop spending your uncle's money for tuition fees for school. Ramana thought about this and pondered it. And he decided to leave. He wrote a little note for the family saying, I am going about my father's business. Please do not try to look for me. I am paying my brother's school fee. He had the money to pay his brother's school fee that day and his school fee. So he went and he paid his brother's school fee. And with the money that he had left, about 3 rupees, which was considered about a dollar in those days, he had heard his father talking to a friend, not his father's uncle, talking to a friend about Arunachala, Tiruvannamalai, the sacred mountain. When he heard the name Arunachala, and his thrill went up his body. He heard that name before, very much so. It was very meaningful to him. So he bought a train ticket for Tiruvannamalai. Only got on the wrong train. When he got off, he was about 150 miles away from where he wanted to go. He had spent his money, didn't have any left. So he sat down at the railway station and started to meditate. He became absorbed in consciousness. A couple lived nearby, saw him, man and wife. They said, here's a great saint sitting here meditating. Let's take him to our house and feed him. They sat down with him. 4 hours later, he opened his eyes. And he took him to their home, fed him, asked him where he was going. He told them. But he wouldn't take any money from them to take the right train. Instead, he had gold earrings. He was a Brahmin boy. He pierced the ears and put the gold earrings in the ears. They were very expensive. So he told the couple, you hold these earrings for me and advance me the money to go on the trip. Which they did. So he took the right train and finally got to Tiruvannamalai. He got off and saw the beautiful temple, the ancient temple. He started to walk toward it, and he did so. He took off all his clothes piece by piece and threw them away. The extra money he got for the earrings, he threw into the ponds. And all of a sudden it started raining. He saw this to be a blessing from God to wash him clean. He was reborn. Ramana was dead, and the sage was born. He went into the temple, sat down underneath one of the giant pillars, and became absorbed in nothingness. You can imagine how cold it was. The floors were marble. It was raining, cold night. And he was entirely nude, sitting there in front of the pillar. To make a long story short, he remained in the temple, around the temple, the mango fields close by, for many years. As people started to gather to look at him, he started to run away. He ran up the hill on the Chola, lived in various caves for many years. Came down again. An ashram was built around him called Ramana Ashram, which is there today. He lived an extraordinary life. Of all the sages that I've met in my travels, Anandamayi Ma, Papa Ram Das, Nin Karoli Baba, Nisargadatta Maharaj, many others unknown. Ramana is the purest soul I've ever met. I had a similar experience when I was 14 years old. But it's different being brought up in New York City and having a spiritual experience. In India, they realize what it is. In New York, they want to put you in a psychiatric ward. So I want to confirm this. This is the only reason I travel, to see these saints and sages. I want to confirm the experience, where I was, what I felt. Welcome, John. I wanted to know if there were any other people who felt the same thing. The spiritual teachers I met in the United States only went so far. So I went to India when I was young. Met these sages. Realized they were experiencing the same thing as myself. I became satisfied. Fulfilled. Now all of the great sages since the beginning of time I've taught basically three direct messages for self-realization. And these messages I'm going to share with you. These three messages I'm going to share, the highest teachings on earth. If we would only practice these things, we will need nothing else. And we will awaken, become free, which we already are anyway, but you don't believe it. It behooves us to practice these three methods. The first one, as being the acquaintance of sages and satsang. Hanging out with sages. Being around sages. And satsang. This is the first principle. It doesn't sound important to some people, but it's very important. This is the highest teaching you can get. To be with the sage. Why? A true sage is like the sun. The sun's rays shine all over the earth. The sage's grace shines all over also, just like the sun. But those people who come to the sage, who hang out with the sage, receive the powerful rays of the sage more so than everybody else. And it's like the sun again, when you take a magnifying glass and you bring the ray of sun close so it starts a fire. This is what happens to the person who hangs out with the sage. Who's around the sage and satsang most of the time. Now some of you may say, I've been around sages for a long time, nothing has happened to me. I'm still the same I've always been. The answer to this is, check yourself out. What are you really doing? In other words, what is your main interest? You have to be honest with yourself. Is your main interest release from bondage or social life? What is your true reason for coming to see a sage? What do you want? Ask yourself, find out. Do the material things of this world turn you on more than self-realization, wanting self-realization? What is your real purpose? In the ultimate truth, there is no purpose, of course. But we're speaking of the aspiring Yani who wants to awaken fast and not have to go through incarnation after incarnation again. If they find a sage, they just stay with that person. As long as they can. The mistake many of us still make is we keep running from sage to sage, from teacher to teacher, checking people out, going here, going there. This is fun, this is good. To an extent, but the time comes when we have to stop and get a little more serious about this. By going from sage to sage, from teaching to teaching, it will be very hard for you to awaken. Why? Because every sage is different. And by the way, real sages are few in between. There are many teachers. In today's age, there are more teachers than there are disciples. Teachers are all over the place. You know, every day I was here, for sure, and a new teacher was coming to town. Quack food duck. We'll be here tomorrow to show you his new message. The Meshuggah Yogi will be here. To bring you peace and harmony. and on and on. I like it's filled with teachers and sages all over the place. Now we mean well. But if you really want to find the truth, you should stick with one person. Now I'm not speaking about myself, you know. Because most of you who know me know that I don't care about having a lot of people. I'm not looking for fame or name or anything. But it's up to you what you're looking for. What do you want? You have to find the right sage that you respect, that you have something in common with, and stick with that being. And follow the teachings. This is the only way you'll ever awaken. This is the true way of awakening. It's not reading so many books, saying, I know everything now, there's nothing else to do, I know it all. I'm finished with this past. But if you look at your life, you'll see you're not finished. Because you have the same old problems, same old depression, same old nonsense going on in your life. Things disturb you, things bother you. How can you think you realize if you have these problems going on? Don't fool yourself. So being in the company of a sage is very important. It's the highest principle of all spiritual teachings. The second direct message is self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is very important also. I know many of you have tried practicing self-inquiry and it becomes boring to you when you say you don't need it. You've done it for a couple of hours, that's enough for your life. But Bhagavan Sramani Maharshi, and other great sages, Shankara, many sages, many saints, I've emphasized the importance of self-inquiry, Atma-vichara. It's very easy to do. You should practice it all day and all night. Especially if you found a sage. When you're sitting with a sage in meditation, practice self-inquiry. Practice it during the day when you're going about your business. Practice it during the night when you're going to sleep. Keep on practicing, practicing, practicing. Don't stop. Keep doing it again and again. So fortunate is the person who has found a sage to be with and can also practice self-inquiry. Self-inquiry simply means you question everything that arises. That's all it is. Everything that arises, you question it. When you get up in the morning, for instance, you question yourself, who's getting up? Who just awakened? When you're getting dressed, you question who's getting dressed? You examine your feelings, you watch your feelings, your thoughts. Who has these feelings, you say to yourself? Who has these thoughts? As you're eating your breakfast, you question, who's eating? Whatever you do, you question it. And as you keep questioning, something interesting is happening within yourself. Your mind is becoming weaker and weaker from this questioning. The mind is nothing like a conglomeration of thoughts of the past and the thoughts of the future. This little mind is a bunch of thoughts. It keeps you earthbound. You question yourself, who's feeling this? I am, who am I? I've explained this most of you so many times, but yet some of you just do not do it. You think it's for beginners or children. But on the contrary, it's very powerful. So you have to have a lot of humility to do these things. If you have a big ego, you will quit everything and think that you're great. You have to have a lot of humility, a lot of humbleness. You have to forget about yourself totally and completely. The third direct method is self-surrender. You can do all three of these things simultaneously, you know. You can be with a sage, practice self-inquiry, and also surrender. This is what a true devotee does. You do all three. Without even knowing you're doing them. What is self-surrender? When you give up your ego, your life, your possessions, your body, your thoughts, to the self, to the one self. When you let go of everything, everything, if you can really do this, where's the problem? Where's the anxiety? Where's the sorrow? We're surrendering it all to the self, to God. You're giving it all away. If you can really do this, what you call God will take over all of your life completely and absolutely. You'll no longer have anything to worry about. You'll have no responsibilities yourself. But yet you will do what you're supposed to do in a beautiful way, harmonious way, lovely way. And you'll feel happy all the time. When the time comes, when you can sit in a chair by yourself, become absorbed in the infinite, and feel the bliss that is your true nature, realizing that there's nothing in this world that can give you this bliss. Nothing. Then you made headway on the spiritual path. In other words, if your friends invite you and they say, let's go drinking, let's go have a ball, let's go bowling, let's go steal a car, let's go shoot somebody in the freeway, And you say, nah, I don't think I'll do this today. And you sit down and feel the joy, the peace, the love, which is yourself. You've come a long way if you can do this. But most of us are running around all over the place. Going here, going there, looking for a good time. And we think we've made spiritual advances. But as you know, the first thing that comes along of a derogatory nature upsets you very much. This tells you how spiritual you are. When you become very mad, excited about something or somebody, it upsets you. How can you think you made spiritual progress when you can still get upset, become angry, become fearful? When you think someone's trying to hurt you or take something from you, how can you call yourself spiritual? A true spiritual being is at peace at all times. And when something doesn't go right in the life of a spiritual person, they observe it, they watch it, they smile at it, they get absorbed in it, and they come out smiling, laughing. In other words, nothing can hurt them again. Let's talk about you. Where do you think you are on the spiritual path? Again, you can answer this yourself by the life you're living. Take a look at your life right now, see what's going on. Are you truly free and happy and peaceful? Are you only happy and peaceful because things are going your way right now? As you know, in this world everything changes constantly, consistently. So if you're happy because things are going your way, it will change shortly, as it must. And then you'll feel upset and sad and disillusioned. Then you'll say, this doesn't work. This stage is no good, let me go find another one. Remember, it's also interesting again the way the mind works in a case like this. I'm here with you all the time. And most of you get to know me intimately. We go to lunch, we see each other a lot. And you get used to me. But if you go traveling, and you see a sage or a teacher, you only see them once or twice or three times. So you think it's something real special that's different. Because you're thrilled by seeing these people. You haven't seen them in your life. You've heard so much about them. But then if you had to live around the proximity of them, with them day after day watching them work, you wouldn't like them too much. It would be different than what you thought they were. What I'm trying to say is be thankful for what you've got. Your life is your life. You can do it with anything you want. Try to find the bliss within you. Awaken the peace within you. Awaken the love within you. Live spontaneously in the moment. Forget about the past, the future. Try to understand somebody out there loves you. The whole universe is your friend. Nothing is against you. You have no enemies. All is well. And everything's unfolding as it should. Peace. While the food preparers prepare the food so we can stuff ourselves, we can get perhaps Karima to sing a song or two.
Oh.
David White couldn't come today. He has the flu. No voice. So we shall improvise and do what comes naturally. We'll listen to Karima's beautiful songs.
Something, and then all of a sudden my mind's blank, and I'm like standing there saying, now what was I just starting to do? And I might stand there for a minute or two before I my mind starts to, oh yeah, this is what I'm just going to do.
You're losing your mind, Alan.
Hallelujah. I think that's good.
Do you think it's good?
I'm asking you, really.
Never mind what I say, what do you say?
Well, you say annihilate the mind, so I guess it's good.
It has to do with what you think, not what I think.
Well, I'm trying not to think.
That's good. So you have to do is not think and you're
saying. Well, let you think for me, you see.
I don't think either.
You guys are getting nowhere.
There's no one who thinks, what are you going to do now?
I mentioned this before, but it seems to me that if I spend time thinking a person, a place, or a thing should be different than it is, I'm spinning my wheels.
Sure.
Every person, every place, and everything has a role to play. Mm-hmm. And it's not up to me to change it or even think it should be different than it is.
Exactly.
And that goes for Mother Teresa or Dr. Schweitzer or Adolf Hitler or Charlie Manson. They're all part of the show.
You're right.
Thank you.
Exactly. So I get caught up in it.
Sir?
Why get caught up in it?
I don't know. Well, I had to say something. Oh, well.
If you leave something alone, it'll disappear. If you give it energy by thinking about it, by pondering it, it becomes stronger. If you leave everything alone, you'll be free. Try to change things or keep things the way they are. They don't suffer.
Are you advocating more witnessing the mind than inquiry in the mind?
Well, we're not really talking about witnessing the mind. We're not talking about inquiry. Yet they're both part of it, too, at different times. We're talking about removing the wall, which is the eye-flow that's been there for centuries, the illusory wall that doesn't exist, between consciousness and the thoughts. When there's only a wall there, then the thoughts disappear by themselves of their own accord. But as long as there's a wall there, they'll come up against the wall and they'll bounce back again. And the mind will become stronger and stronger and stronger, but it'll keep bouncing back again every time it hits the wall. So you have to simply see the wall breaking up in your consciousness. If you want to practice self-inquiry, which is you can, you can inquire, to whom does this wall come? Who sees this wall? Who has to get rid of it? And realize that the wall doesn't even exist. Buddha will say, I see the wall. I see it as this wall. When all the time the eye is really the wall itself. So when you realize the eye flow doesn't exist, it's the same as getting rid of the wall. By inquiring, who am I, you're really saying, who's responsible for the wall? Where did the wall come from? You can go both ways. Play with it. See what you get. See what happens. But the wall, the name for the wall is the ego, the I thought. I had a lady who used to imagine that there's dynamite blowing up the wall, that she's lighting the fuse and dynamite, and the whole wall being blown to smithereens. Use your imagination to get rid of the wall.
Mary, we want to do anything.